Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments.
All right, and welcome back. Welcome back. It is episode 25. So we'll get right at it. But Leanne Starling is a registered horticultural therapist, a certified rehab counselor, rehabilitation counselor, excuse me, and a licensed clinical professional counselor as well. She received her BS in horticulture with the concentration in horticultural therapy from Virginia Polytech Institute and the State University. And her MS is in rehab counseling from San Francisco State University. She has completed a post-master's clinical counseling program at the University of Baltimore in Maryland. Leanne has worked in the field of horticultural therapy for over 30 years in therapeutic, rehabilitative, and vocational programs serving individuals of all ages and abilities. Leanne has designed and implemented several adaptive gardens for healthcare facilities. As a professional therapist, she incorporates horticultural therapy into her practice, and she has served on the AHTA Board of Directors for many years, from 2007 to 2021. We are very excited to have Leanne for our number 25, and Irene, take it away.
Thank you. Wow, I did not realize you served that length of time on the Board of Directors.
I did, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a record of all of the board of directors to say who served the longest?
there are records, yes, that keeps track, and I think there's one other person that I think served either 14 or 16 years as well. But okay. other than that, yeah, I've been the longest, I think.
Who's that other person?
Marianne McMillan.
Oh, yeah. So we really want to just learn a little bit about the moment of your realization or your, you know, as Erin and I call this, the aha moment. And maybe there isn't just one Leanne for you. Maybe there's several of them, and that was what we were also referring to as maybe stepping stones or moments of realization where you were like, gosh, I really need to incorporate horticultural therapy into my clinical services. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you learned did you learn about it even before you did any of your clinical services, back as a wee one?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Give us a little bit of your journey. Tell us your story.
All right. So, gosh, where to start? So my journey. Yep. And my story. So I'm one of those folks that we call, you know, your first career horticultural therapist. So, gosh, if I go back to how I began to consider horticulture, right, in my life, right? Mm-hmm. So I was as a teenager, my dad, our house was always full of plants. And mm-hmm. my father always spent a lot of time in the yard. Mm-hmm. And so as a teenager, my father started to share with me his love of plants. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 15, I was in a pretty bad car accident when I was 15 years old. And my dad, to help along with my recovery, my father gave me my first plant that was, you know, my plant, right? Mm-hmm. So he gave me a spider plant. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty banged up from that accident. My jaw was broken. I was really not able to participate in school for a period of time. And so I give credit to my dad who gave me this plant. And then he taught me how to take care of plants. Mm-hmm. He taught me how to propagate plants. He just shared his love of plants with me, and he included mm-hmm. me in getting to know all the plants in the house. And there were mm-hmm. a lot, right? But I always had my own spider plant, right? That was mm-hmm. my plant. And it, right. as you know, spider plants continue to grow and grow and grow. And so that's where I learned, I began to really make the connection between, here's this plant and it's sending out all these babies, and I can propagate these, and then I can share that with other people. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first, like,
did you take this spider plant to college with you?
Well, so we could, I did. Yes.
All right.
But because I have a story about the spider plant too, because it's still part of my life today.
And we're talking,
you know, we're talking, what are we talking, like 50 years later almost?
Yeah.
But so my dad, he was in the military, and so he was stationed overseas to Germany, and as an adolescent, it was a big deal for him, for me to, you know, he put me in charge of the yard while he was gone. Mm-hmm. So he taught me all about landscaping. He taught me about pruning. He taught me all about the outdoors. So now I was being introduced to all of that. And as a kid, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a really big deal to take care of all of his plants.
Right.
With the pressure that none of them could die.
Right, exactly.
You know, before he came home, right? So I think about that time, I started thinking about going to college, and I started thinking about horticulture.
Mm-hmm.
But I had also over the years had, you know, some opportunities to be introduced to working in social services through family members, you know, that would take you to like those career days, right? Mm-hmm. Get introduced to social services. So when I decided to go to school for horticulture, I lived in Virginia at the time, and I wrote down to Virginia Tech. And I got all this information back from Virginia Tech. And in the brochure from Tech was this thing called horticultural therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, what is that? I'm really curious about that. And so I went, so this would be like an aha moment.
Right.
You know, in the sense of, so I go down to Virginia Tech. I had no idea who Dr. Ralph was at the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I just knew she was the professor, right? And so I went down to Virginia Tech, and I met with various people in horticulture, and then I met with her, mm-hmm. and she told me all about horticultural therapy, and she told mm-hmm. me all about the association. And at that time in the 80s, you know, the profession was still relatively new at that time. So she kind of filled me in on the whole thing. And then when I left Virginia Tech that day and I was driving home, I was like, you know what, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. So that was like my aha moment to decide to go into horticultural therapy.
Did you have any inclination as to how to actually apply horticultural therapy in the sense of that you were going to go into social services, or that you were going to maybe do horticultural therapy in a veterans, you know, like where did you, mm-hmm. did you have any idea of like, how am I actually going to work in the world, in the field of horticultural therapy?
Well, back at that time, I really thought a lot about working with people who had gone through accident or illness, physical mm-hmm. disability.
Right, something you know very close mm-hmm. about, yeah.
So that's kind of what I was looking at, and mm-hmm. just looking at how to use horticulture, not only for physical rehabilitation, but also for vocational training. Mm-hmm. Because I had been introduced to that as well. So that was my limited understanding of how to apply horticulture as a therapeutic modality at that time in my life. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the spider plant, because you asked me if I brought the spider plant to college.
Yeah.
So I did. I did bring the spider plant with me. And over the years, the parent plant has, I don't like to say the word died, because it didn't really die. The parent plant was kind of grew old, and you know, and it had all these other sprouts, you know, off of it. So the spider plant that I have in my house today is seventh generation of the original plant.
Oh, that's awesome.
And who knows how many people I've shared spider plants with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But my core plant is seventh generation. Mm-hmm.
That's insane. That's so cool.
And have you given it as gifts, your cuttings to friends or family or to mm-hmm. clients?
Well, not to clients, but I have definitely shared them as gifts.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah. It's very hard. It's just hard not to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My first plant that I ever took care of was an asparagus fern. And I got it when I was in fifth grade. And I was so proud of myself, you know, growing on into, you know, I got it as like a little 3-inch pot, and I got it into pretty much a 12-inch hanging pot. And then I went to college in San Francisco as well, for my undergrad. But I couldn't take it via plane with me.
Oh, so, yeah, right.
Because I live in Maine. And so I had my parents take care of it. It didn't feel the same pressure as you did for your father. They just let it die, which was really very...
Let it die.
Bummed out, to say the least.
It's pretty traumatic. When
it
you're,
really
when
is. You're, I mean, yeah. I'm like, mm-hmm. I leave my dog with you and I leave my fern apple gone by the time I get back.
Oh, gosh.
Anyways. So some of us do have a stronger inclination and desire to keep and nurture these things that rely on us, you know what I mean? And so plants are equally, you know, important to many of us, I would say.
Well, and to stop and think that they share our life with us.
Exactly.
You know, we can have our dog or our cat, and for all those years... And we think of our animals as sharing our life and going through all of our moves and everything, but plants do the same.
Right. Right.
And they have to go through the same adjustment period that we do. And yeah, so they're with us for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I hear stories about that with, you know, Christmas cacti or pothos, you know, spider plant's a common one for sure because they are great for propagation. So
yeah. Yeah.
So when you ventured into, so after taking your undergrad in as a concentration in horticultural therapy, right? It was not a mm-hmm. true degree in horticultural therapy.
Well, at that time, in the late 80s, the only true, what we would say, graduate, that you could graduate with it on your transcript was Kansas State University.
Right.
And I believe Rutgers University,
mm-hmm.
but at Virginia Tech, they did not offer a BS in horticultural therapy. So it was the horticulture and then the concentration. Mm-hmm. But what made it unique is not only because Dr. Ralph was my advising professor, she worked with me to put in place all the human science courses.
I was just going to ask
about that. And the horticultural therapy. Yeah. And so she worked with the department so that I didn't have to take some of the other mandated horticulture classes because I was horticultural therapy.
Right, right.
So, for example, like I didn't have to take fruit trees and berry crops.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I got to take another class that was more in human services.
Right.
So that I could graduate with what would be an equivalent to like the degree curriculum from Kansas State University. Because at that time, in the profession, everyone's programs, all academic programs and internships were all modeled after Kansas State University.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So transitioning from Polytech, Virginia Polytech, did you go into a horticultural therapy job applying of it in a specific mm-hmm. setting, or did you go directly to grad school to get into more clinical services and then start your hort therapy?
No, so I so after my degree, because back then to become professionally registered, students were required to do a 1,000-hour internship and an additional year of employment.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So I went on to do my internship down at Florida State University, which mm-hmm. was a fascinating experience. And Florida State Hospital in Chattahoochee, Florida. There you go, Florida State Hospital. And so I did that 6-month program. And then I went My first job was at a VA hospital in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And so once I was there for a period of time, and then I went on to, I stayed within the military system, and I went on to work at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And at that time, then once I got all my work hours in place, I applied for professional registration.
And where is the Walter Reed Medical Center?
So the original Walter Reed has since closed, but it was located in Washington, D.C., right up at the top of D.C., between Maryland.
You went back to your roots of your area that you were familiar with?
Yeah, I actually did. Yeah, I did a roundabout down to Florida and up to Pennsylvania, but then I came back to D.C.
And you were in California too, right?
And then I went on to California. So that's the graduate school.
I see.
Walter Reed, at the time when I worked there, the military was going through all these changes, which is now known as TRICARE. Mm-hmm. But at that time, it was brand new. And so they moved all of the psychiatry services out of the Walter Reed Hospital and moved it over to Bethesda Naval Hospital. It was all part of this restructuring thing with the military.
God.
And I was left with no greenhouses, no gardens, nothing. Ugh. Yeah. So the government, since my program was basically...
Is that...
Yeah.
Was that the impetus or the incentive for you to... get your direction in for the clinical services at that point?
It was. And I, so then at that time I made that decision to move to California since my family was in California. Yep.
Oh,
And at that time I'd been in the field long enough to recognize that, and this might be more than you're wondering about, right? But I had been in the field long enough to recognize that with managed care that came in the 90s.
Yeah.
Being a registered horticultural therapist was not going to advance the profession.
Right.
And if I wanted to advance in the profession, I needed a clinical degree. So that's when that's why I decided to go back to graduate school.
And I mean, that's not all that different for a lot of people who, are practicing horticultural therapy now, are either an occupational therapist, again, a rehabilitation therapist or a speech therapist, et cetera, and they're employing it so that they can get a lot of those benefits of the health insurance and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Someday we may have another opportunity, hopefully, but we won't go down that road right now.
Okay.
Right. So the populations that you are serving, you've been serving what, the last 20 some odd years or so, 30 some odd years, from veterans to, are they still veterans that you're working with? Or are you working with general, like a variety of population?
So after moving to California, then I decided to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out of the clinical, more the clinical horticultural therapy, and I went in the direction of vocational horticultural therapy.
Okay.
So I started working with people who have cognitive disabilities, intellectual disabilities, and I ran a pretty serious vocational program for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I decided to go back to graduate school.
Oh, okay.
Was after I did that. And, so then I went back to grad school, but then I spent some time in the part of my career where I was more invested in designing gardens.
Yeah, yeah.
So I managed lots of grants and I installed a lot of gardens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
community-centered gardens or
no, clinical gardens in say either rehabilitation facilities, long-term care.
Oh. So oh, how fitting. I mean, since we just had Richard Slayton, who is a landscape architect for Healing Gardens, then because we haven't really had that many guests who actually have done or are doing what actually you have experienced doing, and same with Richard. So it's nice to hear that there is that, what I love about horticultural therapy is that it can appeal to people who are very creative or people who are more engaged with clinical services or they just, or they're in the data feel. They really love the doing the documentation or the data. And it sounds like you've done almost a little bit of it all. So
I think I probably have checked out many of the, most aspects of it. Yeah. And, but
you're well-rounded, Leanne.
No, it's my 30 years, right? Yeah. That I had the opportunity, right? But it was interesting to switch from being in the therapist role and actually having clients to the horticultural therapist role, more as the consultant and the designer to put in adaptive and accessible gardens. Mm-hmm. And that came out of all my vocational work to be able to do that. So it was really fulfilling for a long time.
And the fact that you were applying for grants for these gardens as well, what was that, as far as your capabilities, did you seek out help, support on getting grants, to write grants? I mean, they're not an easy thing to do, to write for grants, so, or request grants.
So I'm the kind of person that if I don't know, something, I go take a class about it. So if I was going to be writing grants, I wanted to know how to do it. So I went and took a bunch of classes on grant writing through adult education.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
So that's how I did it. And I while I was living in California, I was able to, I was a consultant for the University of California Cooperative Extension all around the Bay Area. And so I wrote several grants for the cooperative extension because out in California, anyway, they had many programs that served the community. And then I was part of another Department of Rehabilitation grant that happened to come my way in California. And so I just got to got this networking going on that people then knew that I was somebody who could write grants and fund gardens. And so I did quite a bit of that.
Yeah. Did actually people hire you to help them out then in that case?
I did. Yes. Yeah. I had quite a few. Yeah. I mean, all the way from small gardens in a woman's shelter, women and children escaping domestic violence, all the way to putting in a small garden in a shelter to putting in a huge garden in a long-term care facility that was that I worked at for a couple. I worked there for a couple years in addition to putting in their garden. To then doing, building raised beds, laying down pathways, all of that kind of.
What were some of your more innovative accessibility features that you've designed or you've included that come to mind? Do you have anything that you're like, oh, I'm really proud of this,
Well, for a while, I started designing my own raised beds because at that point I had worked with people of all different ranges of abilities. And so I actually, back then, I had a slide presentation that showed all the various kind of beds that I could build. And it had the plans and it was almost like a marketing packet.
Right. I was just going to say a kit. Yeah.
Like a kit. So I would have a picture of the bed. I'd have all the supplies and materials and I'd have the cost. And I would go and I could market myself as somebody who could special design, your raised beds. And so I had quite a few creative designs for wheelchair accessibility. Some of the beds I designed were all with group facilitation in mind. So they were like three level beds. Like you take people sitting, standing, and using wheelchairs, different abilities. And so for a while there, I was a serious construction worker.
I was going to say, engineer. Civil engineering, you're going to dabble in. Did you take any classes on that?
So, the class that really gave me the foundation was when I was in college. It was landscape construction and design.
Yeah.
And it taught me how to build a greenhouse. I worked at a place where I built a greenhouse. It taught me how to build retaining walls. I built retaining walls. So I was able to take a lot of what I learned from that class to then really refine my skills to adaptive beds.
Mm-hmm. You must have taken really good notes to refer back to them all those years later. They didn't have recordings like we do with Zoom nowadays.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
So you've done the designing. What drew you to wanting to go into, did you do more of the clinical in the middle or at the end? Where does that come into play that you seem to have, you know, this is in your bio. So it seems to be a strong priority of yours. So
when I was at the VA in Walter Reed, it was very clinical. And mm-hmm. so I did, and it was actually really intense. Mm-hmm. I was an inpatient psych on both an adult unit and an adolescent unit. And so when I moved to California, I decided to take a break from working in mental health. And so that's when I, you know, went into the vocational and the landscaping and all of that. And it was a really nice break to take. Mm-hmm. But I always kept coming back to the underlying mental health aspect of working within the disability broad community, right? So when I decided to go back to rehabilitation, when I decided to go to my master's, I wanted to have a solid understanding of all disability groups. I didn't want to focus on one. And that's what rehabilitation counseling offers. Mm-hmm. It offers the opportunity to learn about all aspects of disability, which was very, very fulfilling. Mm-hmm. But as I went through that and I did my practicums, you know, my internships, and I found that I just kept coming back to the clinical side of my interest in working with people. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept coming back to that. So after the rehabilitation counseling, I started looking at ways to get back into that. But I also, you know, to say again, I went back to get my master's to help advance the profession of horticultural therapy mm-hmm. in the sense that I wanted credentials that somebody would consider what I had to say. I wanted to make
be taken really seriously as a profession, and in that there is truth in the evidence that this is very effective. This is an effective means.
And it was because managed care had done so much to the profession that then we needed those additional credentials as horticultural therapists mm-hmm. because of the way that managed care was working. So I went back into the clinical aspect of it. And then life took me back to the East Coast, to Maryland, where I am now. And when I left California and I came to Maryland, I decided that at that time in my life, I didn't want to go back to doing construction. I didn't want a serious labor job. I didn't, as much as I love gardens and greenhouses, I didn't want the labor mm-hmm. aspect of it any longer, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go straight clinical. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I went back to get my license as a clinical counselor mm-hmm. to go straight psychotherapy, and then horticultural therapy would want to be one of the tools in my toolbox.
Exactly. So in your toolbox, would you say that this is a mode that you use a certain percentage of time that seems frequent, like 20%, 50% on, or maybe it's all over the place just based off of all your patient clients that you work with?
Yeah. So I was working in a community mental health clinic, up until just last year when, of course, COVID, you know, changed everything. Yeah. But when I was able to, I would, if my clients were open to it, I introduced like all kinds of activities, mm-hmm. you know, and if somebody was open to doing things, I would do activities in my sessions. I did a lot of metaphor work. I did a lot of expressive arts work all around horticulture. I did a lot of bringing in more of the awareness of working with plants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit and it went straight telehealth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all my resources, I couldn't do anything, right?
Right.
I just sat there. I was on a phone or video.
Right. I mean, in that case, were you able to give some responsibility to the to the clients as far as like if they had a house plan or if they had, you know, if maybe it's a tactile item that you use for reflexology or something like that, mm-hmm. that you would assign them to say, hey, you know, even though I can't see you perhaps or whatever, but is there a way in which you could work with them on a practicum that they are coming back to you and telling you, hey, Leanne, I did that last mm-hmm. week and it, you know, I feel better. There's something about it that made me feel better.
I had a few people that I could continue that with.
Yeah.
The clients that I worked with were severely impacted by their mental health.
Right.
And really didn't have a lot of resources.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I did maintain a connection to the people that did have gardens or could do seeds. And mm-hmm. we would continue that. I did work with people that just leave their house.
Yeah.
And go to the park.
Right. Yep.
Was a lot of just, let's just leave your house for the day or let's go sit outside in the sun. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so after a year, almost, what was it? Almost all of 2021. So after almost two solid years of doing nothing but being on the phone or video, I decided to leave that position because I recognize horticultural therapy is part of who I am and what I do. And without it, my position wasn't as fulfilling as I would have liked. Right.
Right.
So now what I'm doing is I'm taking horticultural therapy I'm still going back to my roots, so to speak, now that I'm not doing telehealth, and I'm becoming I'm attending a certification course to become a nature informed therapist.
Oh, I was wondering what you were doing. You said the other day you were doing something.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And it's very, and it's very intense. It's very clinical. It's it requires group supervision and individual supervision. It's a 3-month training program.
Where's that through?
Pardon?
Where's that through?
And it's through. So it's through nature informed. It's Chesapeake Mental Health Services, which is a program out here. But it's a woman who has started her own certification program to be a nature-informed therapist. And I believe, I don't know the name right off the top, but I believe it's a nature-informed institute.
Mm.
Possibly. Mm. But because, you know, people refer to horticulture as nature-based.
Right.
And it is nature-based, but they're very different.
Right. Well, it all depends on, I'm very curious about this, but it all depends on the active component versus the passive component of it. Yeah. And so your physical engagement with whatever it is that you're doing mm-hmm. in nature or if you're doing with plants, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what separates the two.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Nature is the environment and horticulture is the activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it is, it's pretty fascinating. And it is fascinating for me coming with all this, you know, all this experience in horticultural therapy to be with other licensed clinical counselors and therapists. And they all come and this is all brand new to them.
Right.
And so it's very interesting for me to be observing.
Recruit Leanne. I'm joking.
But you know, there's all, and Aaron can attest to that. There's always that part of me that is reaching out and getting people to be interested. Yeah. So I'm not going to leave horticultural therapy. I'm just redefining myself to get back outdoors.
Yeah.
Because telehealth is just not for me.
I mean, you really are exploring a truly holistic opportunity of anything that's out there in that relates to nature and organic mm-hmm. materials, you know, connecting back to the earth.
So
And water. I mean, just that's another thing. Nature relates into the water, the opportunities of water. And that's really fascinating.
So I'm kind of hoping, since grief has been an area of specialty for me, and it has been my entire career as a horticultural therapist, it's different now, post-COVID. Grief takes on so many forms, and we have that response to so many life events. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping once I finish my certification course and I get my credential for to be nature-informed therapist, that I'm going to either start offering grief services or maybe do volunteer work at a hospice or, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go into the direction of doing grief work, because that's been a specialty for a long time now. Yeah.
I'm excited to hear about how your next chapter leads you, and we'll have to do enough. As we say with most of our guests, we'll have to do a stage two or conversation.
I get to do my part.
Yeah, Erin and I love to ask our guests a certain question. So this is Erin's turn.
I didn't just go on and on too much. Yeah.
No. You've been great. So.
So you have your, of course, your spider plant, which is very personal to you. But what is like your favorite go-to plant that you would use in sessions, if you had one, or maybe just like a genre of them? Oh, I really stumped her, didn't I?
I know.
She's really like thinking.
This is what I'm thinking.
I love it.
I've had different plants to meet different goals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And different. So go-to plants, right? If I'm doing exploring defense mechanisms, coping mechanisms, you know, I would choose plants that have those outwardly visible signs of defenses, like cacti or African violets, or, you know, I would choose, there's that purple passion plant with that flower that just stinks to high heaven.
Why do I know that one?
Passion flower, it's purple and fuzzy. Janeiro.
It stinks.
I know it as purple passion, but it has a lovely fuzzy kind of iridescence to it, and I never really noticed the aroma of that flower. Mm-hmm. It has a beautiful pinkish flower, but never noticed.
It smells terrible. Well, the one that I use, and I will send you both the name. It smells terrible.
This smells terrible.
No, it's a purple.
It's a purple passion plant. It's not flower.
It's an
indoor plant.
Right.
Oh.
And purple passion might just be the name that we had in the greenhouse.
Oh, this one.
Yes. Yep. Ganara.
Yeah.
Ganara. There you go.
The flowers. I've seen this plant before at the garden centers, but the flower smells really nasty.
I'll make sure but I'll send you the right one. I had those plants that were, you know, my go-tos. If I'm doing propagation, you know, of course we have our standards, right? That are the pothos and the spider plants, and those sorts of things. I'm thinking more of the clinical, because it's mostly indoor plants that I would use.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And then there's those plants that there's what the sensitive plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. So, definitely you use plants for your metaphorical opportunity to really understand their adaptive, characteristics to, as you said, defend, to protect themselves. That's interesting. That's cool. Because we oftentimes think, as like you were just saying, propagation, like a lot of times people just want something that's easy to propagate because we want the we want to set people up for success of right. the plant succeeding, right. you know. But
and then if you go outside, if the goal is physical rehabilitation or eye hand coordination, then I would tend to plant in the garden things that definitely would grow out of control and need to be pruned. Yeah, just so that I had that to be able to use as a tool.
Right, right. And what about as far as growing from seed? Any particular plants that you thought were really great to grow from seed for either clinical or for an outdoor setting purpose?
Not that comes to mind as outside of just vegetables. You know, those for outdoor and indoor, but ones that are going to sprout quickly.
Yeah.
Like the basils and the beans and peas and things that sprout quickly. Yeah.
For populations I work with who are visually impaired or they have cognitive limitations as to intellectual disabilities, to have something that is a larger item, more tactilely, you know, comprehensible, you know, they,
Gershom.
Yeah, exactly. That then it feels they, when they can feel it strongly and vividly in their fingers or in their hands, it has a deeper impact to what they're actually doing with this item. Unlike a lettuce seed that is so faint and light and you just blow it away and you wouldn't even know if you sowed it or you blowed it. You know what I mean? You blew it. So,
you sowed it or you blowed it.
Excuse me, particular.
But I can remember, yeah, that being that creative and having to put things either getting creative with how to do seed tapes or take clay and take pea seeds and ball them up or rose petals is another one you can use to ball up seed petal or seeds and put them in the
ground. That's a great idea.
Because the rose petals, you know, not only get the sensory smell to that too, but then they're just going to decompose and
Oh, that's brilliant. I really love that idea. I never thought of that. I'm sure there's other things like that. Like if you wanted to take nasturtium petals or something and you wrap those up. Thank you for that trick. I think everybody is going to borrow that right now as soon as they hear this.
And with the nasturtium, because the flowers are so big, you can actually put the seed in the middle of the flower.
Yeah.
And they can feel like it's cradling the flower and then just rest it into the,
Oh, I'm so using that this year. Thank you, Leanne.
Great. Good. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your, you know, a little bit of your story with our listeners. And I hope that you found it valuable for you to even have a chance to reflect a little bit more on your journey and where you're at. So thank you so much.
I did. Yeah. I enjoyed sharing. Thank you.
It was great to learn more about you, Lee. And I never knew all those things about you.
Oh, gosh.
Like, oh, darn.
Well, I'll have to listen to the tape and, you know, remind myself of, well, maybe you don't want to say that, Leanne. But, no, it was wonderful that you both invited me to share.
Yes. Well, thanks for taking the time. And if you do venture up to Booth Bay, I'd love to have you come visit the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens as a guest. And now that you're kind of in a limbo stage of your doing certification, sounds like you're not working 9 to 5 right now. So think about it.
Yeah. I hope this year opens up, right, to allow for some more of those opportunities.
Well, we're taking advantage of outdoors. I mean, that's the benefit of where we work is that we have such a beautiful setting outdoors. So we take full advantage of that. And then the other thing is we also have forest therapy. You were mentioning informed nature therapy. I bet forest therapy is going to be encompassed by the nature informed therapy too.
I think, it does seem like that.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Leanne and Irene, for coming on tonight. Next time we will see you, or we will hear from you on episode 26. Looking forward to it. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.